Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, March 25th, 2022. The time is 9:04 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. Senator Stevens will not be joining us today. Senator Machicki may be joining us shortly. Thank you to Mary Gwen and Alex. Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just kind of monitor. Let me know if I'm missing something.
All right. So I will bring Senate Bill 236 before the committee at this point. Senate Bill 236 is related to facilities constituting a school. This is the first hearing on Senate Bill 236. And as a committee bill, I will ask my staff to briefly introduce the bill. Mr. King, please provide an explanation of Senate Bill 236.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, I'll just read the sponsor statement, if that's okay.
Please do.
Senate Bill 26 seeks to remedy a technical problem. Sorry, Senate Bill 236. Seeks to remedy a technical problem in the education funding formula. The problem occurs when a district with a single school and more than 425 students opens a charter school. Under current law, the existence of the charter school implies that there's no longer only one facility administered as a school. Consequently, the district must calculate the adjusted ADM in the public school with a lower school size factor. As a result, opening a charter school in such a district comes with a financial penalty of about $1 million per year. SB 236 adds three words to existing law, excluding charter schools. These three words allow the district to maintain its full funding and remove the disincentive a school board faces when considering a charter school application. While it's tempting to consider the fiscal note a $1 million per year increase, it's important to remember that simply closing the charter school would yield the same result. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. King. We do have a committee substitute for this bill. Senator Hughes, would you care to make a motion?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 236, Work Order 32-LS1642-B as our working document.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I'll object for discussion. Mr. King, would you please explain the changes?
Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute adds a Section 2 to the bill, which is an effective date for July 1, 2022. This was just something we missed in the initial drafting to ensure that there's no partial year funding complications.
Thank you, Mr. King. I'll remove my objection. Seeing no further objection, version Bravo is before us. Andrew Lovett with the Lower Yukon School District is here with us today. Mr. Lovett, please come to the presenter's table. And if you would, state your name, your affiliation, to put yourself on the record.
My name is Andrew Lovett. I'm the Chief Business Officer for the Lower Yukon School District.
Thanks so much. And would you give us some background as to why this legislation is necessary?
Yes. So, Senator Holland, members of the Senate Education Committee, my name is Andrew Lovett. I'm the Chief Business Officer for the Lower Yukon School District. I've worked in this capacity for 6 years. Lower Yukon School District is seeking your support of Senate Bill 236. Senate Bill 236 will remedy a funding issue that unfairly penalizes the Lower Yukon School District for opening a charter school in Hooper Bay. The penalty within the statute for adding a charter school to Hooper Bay resulted in an annual funding reduction of $1,033,000 in fiscal year 2021 and $1,021,000 for fiscal year 2022. Until this funding penalty is remedied, the Lower Yukon School District will lose approximately $1 million each year. The district operates two separate educational programs in the Hooper Bay School, the conventional K through 12 school and a 4th through 8th grade charter school that features a culturally relevant place-based learning curriculum for its students. Additionally, the school has a K through 3 UPIC immersion program, but is not part of the charter school and functions as part of the conventional school as a special program. Some would argue that Senate Bill 236 has a fiscal note to the state of Alaska of $1 million annually. Lower Yukon School District sees it the opposite. To date, our loss of foundation funding has resulted in a fiscal surplus to the state of $2 million for fiscal year 2021 and 2022. As a result of the Hooper Bay Charter School, our district had the same number of students, the exact same students, inside the same school building, and yet we realized a funding penalty of over $1 million per year. By adding the three words excluding charter schools to AS 14.17.905, the annual funding penalty is remedied and becomes feasible to fund Hooper Bay's charter school. As it stands now, the statute is punitive, and the unintended $1 million annual funding penalty impacts our entire school district and effectively jeopardizes rural Alaskans' access to school choice. Senate Bill 236 would remedy this funding problem and support charter school equity for rural Alaska school districts. Thank you for sponsoring this and scheduling this legislation. Thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Begich.
And just to thank you, Mr. Chairman, just to reinforce, if you got rid of the charter school, which is something that we wrote the charter school statute so that districts would have the flexibility of effective education for their students. If you got rid of the charter school, you wouldn't have the penalty. Kids would still be in the same school building, et cetera. So really, it's penalizing smaller districts by saying basically they can't have charter schools, and this would effectively erase that penalty. Is that?
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lovett, are you able to speak to, will this affect any other schools or districts in Alaska?
It will not.
Okay, thank you. We do have, with no more questions from the committee, my staff cares to provide some input on that. Mr. King?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, and the department is probably appropriate to answer the question, but I would point out that under the current situation, it is true that the Hooper Bay Charter School is the only district being affected. But in the future, other districts could be impacted, and that's why the legislation is necessary.
All right. Thanks so much. And that goes to my next step, which would have been to go to Mr. Elwin Blackwell. Mr. Blackwell, if you can hear me, please state your name, your affiliation, and your location. You can remain in case. Please state your name, your affiliation, and your location, just to put yourself on the record right now.
Yes, for the record, this is Elwin Blackwell with the Department of Education and Early Development. I am in Juneau. And the answer to that question is no other school or district would be affected by this bill currently. Taking a look at the ADM numbers, it does not appear that any other school district in the near future would be fall under this section.
Thank you for answering that question. Does the administration have any other comments on the bill?
None at this time.
Are there any questions from the committee for the Department of Education? Senator Hughes.
Well, it's not for the Department of Education. I just have a question for for Mr. Lovett. Yes. I was curious if you realized this was a problem when the charter school was being discussed and organized, or was this something that surfaced and you realized it was a problem after the fact?
Through the chair, the history on the Hooper Bay, this funding issue goes back a number of years, and this exact issue came up. It was before the charter school, but it was just simply when the school exceeded the 425, and that was fixed in 2018. When the charter school came up, it was brought up that this was going to be an issue, but there was such a force within the community, the local option to have a charter school. We talked about that this is going to be a problem with the funding. But they wanted a charter school to have the charter school be successful. And so we're back at the table now essentially it's the same issue again, exceeding the 425 and the $1 million funding penalty. As far as the charter school, I'm not sure if they truly understood the impact it would have on the district wide, but yes, this issue did come up.
And follow up?
Follow up.
So the charter school, their funding was intact. It didn't really impact them because that's separate. Is that correct? And I'm just curious why you waited a couple of years. It seems like this would have been a reasonable thing we could have maybe fixed sooner. I'm just curious why the delay.
So the charter school, the charter school's funding, they have a separate carve out. So the charter school itself receives their full funding. It's the funding that goes to the remainder of the district that incurs the penalty. When the charter school opened, when the process started, it was kind of late in the year, and we did bring it up last year right away. We asked, but it was kind of with the shutdowns and the Zoom sessions, it never really gained any traction.
I will also take a little bit of blame on that. As a freshman senator, probably 2 months on the job, I do recall it being brought to my attention and just not sticking at the moment. So I apologize that it didn't get better legs last year. Senator Hughes?
And I would say that the COVID and the situation would add to that. That really makes sense.
All right. Are there any other questions for Mr. Lovett or the Department of Education? And seeing none, thank you, Mr. Lovett, for being with us today. At this point, if members have amendments, please submit them to my office by Tuesday, March 29th. And I will now set Senate Bill 236 aside. Thank you so much. All right. Next up is Senate Bill 196. I'll bring Senate Bill 196 before the committee. It is related to instructional materials in public schools. This is the first hearing on Senate Bill 196. Senator Reinbold, thank you for taking a seat at the presenter's table. And please put yourself on the record and introduce your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and part of the Majority Leader and Minority Leader. Thank you. It's an honor to be before Senate Education today. My name is Senator Laura Reinbold, and I am represent District G.
All right, if you care to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So basically what Senate Bill 196 is it's an act relating to transparency and compelled speech in education. So if you want just a very high level of what the bill does, just open up to Title 14, Chapter 18. It's prohibition against discrimination based on sex or race in public education. So the bill basically just puts bookends in this section of the law. So that's at a very high level if you want to go get into the technicalities right away. So Senate Bill 96 is an act relating to transparency and compelled speech in education. So there are several sections of the bill in referring to Title 14, Chapter 18, specifically relating to prohibition of discrimination based on sex or race in public education. The bill adds a new section for transparency of curriculum and prohibiting compelled speech and enforcement. And that's at a very high level what the bill does, and I'm happy to go over the sectional if you'd like me to, Mr.
Chairman.
Please
proceed.
Okay, so basically the first part of the bill, section one, is just a technical change. It's very, very minor. Section two does implementation. Section number three is the board shall enforce compliance by school districts in regional education areas and shall institute appropriate proceedings to abate the practices found in the board in violation of 14.18.010 through 110. Section four remedies a person aggrieved by the violation or the procedure may file a complaint by the board and has an independent right of action in court for such equitable relief as the court may determine. Section five effectively is supplementary and it can't supersede existing laws relating to unlawful discrimination based on sex or race. Section six is the new area. It's a pretty big section. That's where the meat of the bill really is. It's transparency in education. So curriculum and instructional material used to teach for teachers and training staff on non-discrimination, diversity, equity, inclusion, race, ethnicity, sex, bias, or other concepts that include one or more of other concepts will be displayed on the school's website and updated regularly. Instruction materials on the website will include the title and author of the material as well as any organization or website associated with the material. So if you move on to the next part of that, section six, because this is really where the meat of the bill is, prohibition of compelled speech. A state agency, school district, governing body, charter school, or public school may not allow a teacher, administrator, or other employee to include a course or award a grade for extra credit for political activism, lobbying, or effort to persuade the member of the executive or legislative branch at a local, state, or federal level to take specific action or practicum or similar activity regarding social or public policy advocacy. based on virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin, and when it's relating to inferior or superiority. Students and teachers and other employees have the right to opt out of speech or training in this area. The next section is enforcement. This allows the Attorney General is allowed to have civil action in the Superior Court to enjoin a state agency, a school district, a governing body, charter school, or public school from violating this section. Within 60 days of receiving the written request, the Attorney General may reconsider, revoke, or modify an advisory opinion. And then Section 7 is just definitions, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Senator Reinbold. If that's it for your introduction and the sectional analysis, we can turn to invited testimony. I believe you had a little, did you have any intro for Christopher Rufo?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Christopher Rufo is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's also a contributing editor at City Journal, where his writing explores a range of issues, including homelessness, addiction, crime, and the decline of cities on the West Coast. In addition, his role at City Journal at the Manhattan Institute, Rufo is also the founder and director of American Studio, a public policy research center that he serves as an aggregator for his investigative journalism and filmmaking work. He is a graduate from Georgetown University and a former Lincoln Fellow at Claremont Institute for Study of Statesmanship and Political Philosophy.
All right, thank you, Senator Reinbold. Mr. Rufo, I think I see you on Teams. And if you would, just to state your name, your affiliation, and your location, put yourself on the record. I don't know if you'd noticed, if you'd heard, but we ask that you include your location for part of the public record.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you. My name is Christopher Rufo. I'm a senior fellow at Manhattan Institute, and I'm dialing in from Pierce County, Washington.
Thank you so much. If you would begin your invited testimony.
Yes, I'd just like to say a few words about transparency, why it's important, and how it serves parents and communities, and finally, how it makes schools, public institutions, stronger. Over the last 2 years, especially during the COVID pandemic, while many families were having their children at school and could monitor what was happening in the classroom via Zoom, they saw, in many cases, all over the country, instances of curricula, pedagogies, and teaching materials that shocked them, and in some cases made them feel like they had to take a more active role in their children's education because they weren't happy with what was happening in the classroom. And so I think that this window has sparked a parent movement all over the country. You have active parent organizations now in 1,000 school districts across the country, advocating for restrictions on racially or sexually abusive curriculum materials, as well as advocating for greater transparency so they can have a more active role in their children's education. And so how transparency, especially this bill crafted that's before you, works is very simple. It would require public school teachers to provide parents with easy online access to teaching materials. I've worked with teachers for the last year, talking to them about transparency, and a couple of things are very important to remember. One is that teachers during the pandemic were already posting all of their teaching materials online, so they're very familiar with those online tools. School districts are already set up to do that. And the best teachers that I've spoken with in my research and my policy study, already have a very organized curriculum. And they welcome participation from parents. They welcome a parent activity within the education process. And in fact, a wide range of studies from over the last 30 years have shown very clearly that one of the most powerful indicators of student success is parent involvement. And so transparency is a simple, lightweight effort. It doesn't require a huge expenditure. It uses resources that are already within public school systems to simply provide parents easy access so they know what they can do. And I would summarize the most important thing to know about curriculum transparency is that it's predicated on a very simple moral statement. Parents have the right to know what the government is teaching their children. This is something that should be universal, have universal agreement. It's essential that parents know what's happening. That's essential to not only trust, but it's an essential moral responsibility of school districts and a moral right among families. And so to close my opening statements, then love to make time for questions, is transparency satisfies the moral right of parents to know what's happening. It serves the community because you have greater involvement and greater knowledge about what's happening in these public institutions that are funded by taxpayer dollars. And then finally, it makes schools stronger because teachers can then share information, share lesson plans, receive feedback, and work with parents. That restores trust in the public schools, which unfortunately has been broken to a large extent during the COVID pandemic, and then creates better, stronger families, schools, and communities for everyone.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rufo. And I should have asked if the committee had any questions for the sponsor as well, but if they have any questions for the sponsor, Mr. Rufo, we'll just proceed through our invited testimony at this time. Seeing no questions, thank you, Mr. Rufo. Please hang on. We may get back to some questions on you shortly.
Thank you so
next
much.
Up would be David Boyle. I believe you had a little intro for David Boyle.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Boyle is retired from the Air Force after 20 years of active duty. In 2009, he and two others started Alaska Policy Forum, Alaska's free market think tank. He volunteered full-time for 9 years and was executive director 5 of those years. He worked from 2007 to help improve K-12 education for all Alaskan children. He ran for the school board in 2007 and 8. Two of his children did graduate from ASD. He has researched various educational options to improve student outcomes, to include neighborhood schools, optional schools, homeschools. He believes the best way to achieve student success is to have an effective classroom teacher, an appropriate curriculum, and a motivated student.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Mr. Boyle, if you can hear me, I see you joining us by phone. Please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you. Chairman Holland, committee members, I'm David Boyle, testifying for myself, and I'm located in Anchorage. I want to thank you for this opportunity to comment in support of Senate Bill 196. I will speak to both the transparency and the compelled speech parts of the bill. Most of my testimony will deal with the Anchorage School District, which I'm very familiar. And as you know, Anchorage School District composes nearly 35% of the state student population. The ASD has one of its values, transparency and accountability to the public. And I believe we can all agree that the more transparency in a government agency, the better off we are. To be fully transparent, school districts should post all curricula on their website. The materials listed in this bill, that's that which address diversity, equity, inclusion, race, ethnicity, sex, and bias, for sure needs to be posted on a school's webpage. A parent has a need to know what their children are being taught. And that parent can also help their children to understand what the learning objectives are. Likewise, a teacher should strongly support the posting of these materials to inform parents of what their child is being taught. You see, education is a team effort, teacher, student, and parent. If it's important enough to post the school's weekly lunch menu on the webpage, then it's definitely more important to post these materials regarding diversity, equity, inclusion, ethnicity, race, sex, and bias, on that same web page. And now regarding compelled speech, I'm not sure why we even have to address students not being required to participate in political activism or lobbying efforts, but we must, because this is happening and has happened in the past. I'll give you just one example. A former governor worked with the Anchorage School District to get students to generate support for his budget. He provided his budget information, albeit slanted. Here's the exact wording of the instructions to the students in the ASD. Quote, students have a homework assignment that requires them to take a survey home and spread the word. They also get extra credit if they post on our blog their results, end quote. Students should learn about how government works, the legislative process, and how a bill becomes law, but they should not be used to promote a political agenda anytime and anywhere. No student should also be compelled to believe that the U.S. is basically a racist or sexist country, or compelled to believe one is inherently racist because of the color of their skin. Some of you believe there is no need for this bill because none of this information is being taught in our schools. Well, the Anchorage School District is in the process of hiring a new superintendent. As a part of that process, the district provided a survey to citizens on its webpage that asked about values in the superintendent. One of these qualities is, quote, the superintendent is able to lead diversity, district diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, end quote. This is a direct reference to critical race theory and its principles. And by the way, the contract with that search firm has an entire page devoted to, quote, inclusion, equity, and elimination of institutional racism, end quote. It also says, quote, we will recognize systemic racism as an equity problem for children's access to a fair, thorough, and effective public education, end quote. It would appear these tenets of CRT are vital to the new superintendent selection. Finally, our children need to be focused of our educational process. They need to be nurtured to be successful in life, not to feel inferior on any level. This bill protects our children. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Boyle. If there are no questions at this time, we'll just go. We have, I believe, one more invited testimony, and we'll go to Lee Sloan. Did you have any intro for Lee Sloan, Senator Reinbold?
I apologize. I don't have it, so I would ask her to just go ahead and
leave it up to her. Ms. Sloan, if you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Yes, I'm Lee Sloan. I'm the State Director of Alaska Parents' Rights in Education. I have a teaching degree, and I specialize in gifted education, and I'm a current homeschool parent. Thank you for hearing me today. It's no secret, as David pointed out, that we're in an ideological battle here in the U.S., and these battles are often being fought primarily in our schools and our universities. While we so often hear an emphasis on not being racist, we are in fact being driven into concepts that perpetuate racism, paying more attention to our skin color than our character. We're becoming less tolerant of other viewpoints in our schools. Violence and suicide are up among our young people. It's the mindset that we're being force-fed in public education that's wreaking a lot of this havoc. A few years back, my homeschooled son was 7. He would play every day with kids of every shade and color in our East Anchorage neighborhood. One day, we were watching a movie about civil rights, and he asked me a startling question. What is a black person? The fact that he had many black friends and never thought to categorize them according to the color of their skin was telling. Kids need to be taught to discriminate. That's what's happening in schools around the country. They're being taught discrimination. A few years ago, California, which is my home state, elected to remove the non-discrimination language in their constitution because it violated highly prized values of equity and inclusion, which are misnomers for what these concepts actually cause, which is discrimination and intentional bias. The statue of justice wears a blindfold as she holds scales in her hands. Our nation was founded on principles of equality and opportunity for all. Hard-fought principles to live up to and maintain, but worthy ones. The small word equity has slowly eroded the hard-won standards of equality. It removes the blindfold from Lady Justice and replaces it with a magnifying glass that overemphasizes superficial identifiers like race and gender. It sets back years of progress toward the solid ideals of non-discrimination. Equity may sound progressive, but it is in fact regressive. It promotes toxic tribalism in the culture of a school. Rather than equality of opportunity, it pretends to be able to control equality of outcome. No child should have to defend the aspects about themselves that they cannot change. Instead of subjecting students to this cultural battleground upon entering school, schools should be a place where non-discrimination and freedom of speech is the norm, where a child can be encouraged to develop character regardless of his or her outward appearance or political leanings. We want free thought to flourish in our schools, and we have to fight to protect it. This bill prevents kids from being used as weapons and ammunition for an ideological war that they didn't start. It promotes non-discrimination and diversity of thought in public schools. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sloan. Are there any questions from the committee at this time? Senator Hughes.
So I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward. I've heard from a lot of Alaskans on this topic, particularly parents. And I think it's an important discussion that we have and that we make a decision in regard to this matter. I did have a question, and part of it is I haven't studied this thoroughly and grabbed the statute book, but I'm a little confused because I see directions to the Board of Regents, and then I see in on page one, and then at the end where in the final section we're saying a public school does not include the University of Alaska. So I was just wondering, or any other post-secondary institution, is this policy proposed to be for higher ed institutions in our state, or just K-12?
I believe I know the answer is K-12, but I would like to call on David Boyle or Mr. Rufo, please.
We may have lost Mr. Rufo, but Mr. Boyle, if you can hear me, if you care to answer that question. Oh, he's gone as well. We may have lost Mr. Boyle as well. So you may have to get back to the committee on that one, unless you want to try to answer the question.
Just at a very high level, when I was vice chairman, I've got to go back in my memory, that there is a coordination between the university oversight with some of the Alaska state standards, and that's what I believe this is in regards to, reflective in regards to that. But this the bill actually focuses on K-12 education.
Thank you. And if we could, you know, make 100%, I'd just like to understand that. I also had a question about the prohibiting compelled speech, because I receive every year a batch of letters from fifth graders from Academy Charter School in Palmer, and then I usually late in the spring receive letters from Palmer High School students, and it appears that they are assigned to look over the different bills and things that are being considered, and to write a letter to express support or opposition to whatever issue they pick. So, and I think it's a great way for them being engaged. They don't get the sense that their teachers are instructing them to take a certain position or to have to pick a certain thing, because I'm getting a variety. So I would hope that this would still allow a teacher to have students review what the legislature is doing and on their own pick what the issue that's important to them and take a stand one way or the other on it. Would this bill prevent a teacher doing that, a high school or even a fifth grade teacher?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I tell you, that was going to be one of my questions, and that's on page 3 at the bottom, and it's talking about a teacher. I get the impression from that it's you can't even have like a civics class where they're encouraged to reach out to their local legislators for whatever reason. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that, Senator Reinbold.
My opinion in regards to this is no, it does not prohibit it. It just can't force a teacher to for compelled speech based on virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. So it can't force them. But this wants to encourage free speech, free thinking, and things like that. They just can't be put in a position where they're forced to or indoctrinated in regards to it.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Senator Begich.
Actually, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Reinbold, that's the explicit language of this bill pointed out by the chairman, would prohibit those letters being written. It's regardless of how you may feel about the bill, that's not what the language says. It says allow a teacher, administrator, or other employee to require, include in a course, or award course grading, credit, or extra credit for political activism, etc. That would have to be then not provided any, it couldn't be a part of the course, because part of the course is grading. You know, I want to use an example, Mr. Chairman, if I may. When I was a high school student, myself and my best friend at the time, Tuckerman Babcock, were both very active politically. We had a course with Sharon Clausen where we were encouraged to go out and find issues and ideas that would motivate us. You might imagine, if you know him and know me, that we picked very different issues. We both received course credit for the activities we engaged in, though we were oppositely engaged at the time. And we both reported to the class about our activity. And I would just say, you know, I understand the transparency issues that are described under section six at the beginning, under 1418.150 as proposed. But 1418.160 strikes at the heart of encouraging young people to become actively engaged in forming their own political philosophy. Some years later, both Mr. Babcock and myself, and he'll be amused that I'm even bringing his name up, I think, but we co-taught a course in political philosophy at our old high school. And I've shared this story with Senator Reinbold, but we co-taught that course where we encouraged those who took elective. It was an elective course. We encouraged them to develop their own philosophies based on their own readings. Both Mr. Babcock and myself took time to share different political philosophies in the room, exposing kids to very different philosophies, very different ideas, some of which, in fact, we believed in, that we affirmed and adopted. But we shared different philosophies in that classroom. And what we got was a wide variety of responses from the left to the right, and quite frankly, some that defied definition. One of those is the one that was actually the most compelling to the rest of the students. And so what I see here is good intent and bad execution. And that to me is of concern. And so I want to ask you this question, Senator Reinbold. What is the problem that you have seen here in Alaska that we are trying to resolve with this bill, in particular focusing on the compelled speech issue and the compelled speech section 1418.160?
First of all, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
First of all, Mr. Chairman, I want to answer the first couple questions that were given. And so what this bill does is it does not inhibit regarding, you know, activism in regards to the legislative and writing letters and all that, with the exception of these things. And this is on page 4. It says they cannot direct or compel a student or teacher, administrator, or other employee to affirm or adopt or adhere to the belief or concept. In section A, it says the United States is fundamentally, irredeemably racist or sexist. That's where the bookends are. B, an individual by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, national origins, consciously or unconsciously, inherently racist or oppressive. C, an individual by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, national origins, is blameworthy for committing actions in the past by members of the same sex, race, religion. You've got it there. D, an individual's moral character is determined in whole or part by the individual's race, ethnicity, religion, color, national origin, etc. E, sex, race, or ethnicity, religion is inherently superior or inferior. And F, an individual should be adversely treated based on sex, race, ethnicity, religion, or race, or national origins. And then it talks about using public funds, the next section. So it's bookends with the extremes. It's trying to just get the extremes out of the education.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up?
Follow up?
What you've described in Section 2 is separate from what I was describing in Section 1. These are standalone sections of this bill. This is how we write these laws. Public school may not, Section 1, all of that in Section 1. So, in fact, it would prohibit the awarding of course grading credit or extra credit for any of the things that I just described. Under Section 2, however, there's a second concern, Senator, that I would bring to your attention. You cannot compel a student or teacher, administrator, or other employee to affirm, adopt, or adhere to the belief or concept that B, an individual by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin is consciously or unconsciously inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive. I'm going to just take that section right there and say that as a teacher, I would want to have the ability to describe the nature within our own country of those who enslaved other people and discuss that within a context of whether that was inherently racist. racist or oppressive. I would also want the ability to be able to talk about World War II and what the nature of the Holocaust was. I would want to have my students understand that some people are actually motivated by things other than good intention in what they do. What we do in our public education system, to me, is we instruct our students to think for themselves, and then how they end up determining what is right or wrong is part of what we call critical thinking. We want to encourage our students to see our moral and other difficulties and reason what is right and what is wrong. That is not to compel them to our vision of right or wrong, but it does require, under Section B, that we might have to talk about what has motivated an individual to take an act that was egregious enough for us to change our policy, to fight a civil war over, or to fight a world war over. So I'm deeply troubled by the compelling sections, because I don't think that they get to the intent of, certainly not the transparency intent. What I do think they do is they in fact restrict the ability for our students to learn and for our students to become critical thinkers. Critical thinking, Mr. Chairman, is what has made America work. Our ability to struggle with adversity from the very beginning of our history to now, we have become better for it. Time and time again, we've become better for it. The best when it comes to our sciences, the best when it comes to our belief in what is right and what is wrong. I would hate to take that out of the public education system.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Hughes?
So I hear what Senator Begich is saying, but I am looking on page 4, line 2 and 3, and there's nothing in that that would prohibit a teacher from having a discussion about these historic events that happen. What is being prohibited is the teacher forcing the students to affirm, adopt, or to adhere to a particular belief. It can certainly be discussed. The teacher can certainly give their views, could encourage the students to consider it, but all this is doing is ensuring that the student has the ability to become a critical thinker and make a decision for him or herself. So I actually don't see the conflict that Senator Begich is just discussed. It's just these conversations and classroom instruction periods could still take place.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Reimbold, did you have any comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's exactly what Senator Hughes said. You're allowed to have those conversations, World War II, slavery, et cetera. But it basically, and I'm going to reiterate this again, page 4 is where these are the bookends. It can't compel an employee or administrator, teacher, or student to affirm, adopt, or adhere to the belief that fundamentally or irredeemably racism or sexism. I'm just going to go high level. I'm not going to read all of it. Unconsciously, inherently racist, of sexism, or oppressive. And then an individual by virtue of race, sex, ethnicity, religion, color, national origins is blameworthy for actions committed based on religion, color, national origin, a moral character. It addresses moral character. It addresses an E, inherent superiority or inferiority. F, it goes over adversely treated. An individual should not be adversely treated based on sex, race, ethnicity, religion, or national origin. And then it goes, like I said, into the use of public funds. So the discussions can take place. They just can't compel a student, teacher, to affirm, adopt, or adhere to a belief that fundamentally is very sexist or racist, is the bottom line.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. On a slightly different topic, we had this discussion some time ago about Alaska State Troopers and policies on public policies for Alaska State Troopers. Turns out they were already publishing their policies on their website, but the action we were looking at would require it so a future administration wouldn't drop it. Is there an example of any school currently publishing a curricula online that I had looked around trying to find one? I must have just been looking in the wrong places. But is there an example of a school that currently publishes their curricula online to look at as an example?
Well, they were doing it during COVID. So we know the mechanisms are all in place. I know I had a bill way back when I was a freshman trying to encourage, transparency and posting, because I'll tell you, I had a son that was very forgetful. My son would forget his stuff all over the place. And so to me, it would be really, really helpful to have that. My other son was extremely organized. So for me as a parent, it is just incredibly helpful to be able, I can't tell you how many times I drove back and forth to the school, to go pick stuff up that he had forgotten because he was too interested in the sports after school. So we would have to get somebody with broader expertise in regards, because I haven't looked at all of the 40 or so school districts in regards to that. But we do know the mechanisms are in place, especially because of all the remote learning.
All right. Are there any other questions from the committee? So, Senator Hughes.
It's just a technical one that might need to be clarified on page 3, line 22. The school shall retain information about training, instructional, and curricular material for at least 2 years after the material is used. So that begs the question, is that 2 years after it was last used or 2 years after it was first used? And so that was just a technical question that we might want to fix, and I don't know what the sponsor's intention was there.
Senator Reinbold?
It says after it was used, so it's after the moment that it was used, so that's my clarification.
After it was first used?
Yeah, after it was finished, right when they finished using it, starting at that point, would be my interpretation.
Sounds like the interpretation would be after it was last used.
Right.
Used most recently.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It says after on there.
All right. Mr. Boyle is back on the line if we wanted to go. There is, my staff has some thoughts that the comment about the Board of Regents might be a problem in drafting. I don't know if Mr. Boyle has any information to provide on that. Mr. Boyle, did you happen to hear that question, or did we lose you about that time?
No, Chairman Holland, I heard that question, and this bill only applies to the K-12 educational system, to include the REAs in it. Does not include the university system. But I do have a comment in response to, I believe, the Senator Begich's commentary on, we can't teach anything in the classroom like, civics class regarding the legislature and bills, et cetera, and politics. I don't think that's true. What we do not want is what I mentioned before by a former governor, using students as tools to pass his, budget through the legislature, and they were actually doing that. The lesson plan was even provided to the school district in Anchorage by that particular governor. The students were told to go home, ask their parents and their neighbors and their friends to do a survey, and then to pass that onto that particular governor's blog so they could, get all that data together. And if a teacher wants to teach, let's say, the legislature and how to pass a bill, they can have actually a proxy committee in the class, and, two different sides, Democrats and Republicans or whatever, and they can debate a bill. That's the best way to see how a bill is passed, actually, to actually watch it happen in the classroom. So I think we do need this education, for example, in the legislative process. But, I don't think that the kids or the students in any class should be used to promote a particular politician's bill. And thank you, Chairman, for that question.
Thank you, Mr. Ball. Senator Begich?
Thank you. I am going to respond to that just to say, in no instance in any community action class where children are offered the opportunity, and it's usually in junior and senior high, to participate in campaigns, are they compelled to participate in those campaigns? They make their own choices. They don't have to do those choices. And if you can give me an example, Mr. Boyle, of where you know of an individual who is compelled to actually participate in an activity like that they didn't want to participate in, I would very much welcome that for all the members of the committee to see. That simply doesn't happen here. Whether or not the governor was foolish enough to send a note to the ASD and say this is a thing we'd like you to do, that's on the governor. The students always have the choice to do or not do in any civic or community action class as to whether or not they're going to do that. That has been my understanding since 1977 when we first were active with this kind of approach.
Thank you, Senator Beggs. I'll go to Senator Hughes in a second, but Senator Beggs, I'll caution you, is that may be bold saying it doesn't happen because I don't have an example in front of me, but that's part of the argument I've heard for transparency in schools. That and I believe that probably be some of what Lee Sloan would be believing in her testimony, is that that's why the parents want this transparency, because they don't want the kids fighting the battles.
I'm actually referring to the compelling elements, transparency.
I believe we could find some examples of where parents feel that their students were compelled to take part in an activity that they were not interested in taking part of. But I don't have it in front of me right now. But Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we could kind of argue about the definition of compel, but in the case that was Mr. Boyle gave about the governor, in that instance, that students were being offered extra credit for promoting one position. It wasn't presented to the students, what do you think about this? And you can make a decision, but they were actually being instructed for a particular position, being offered extra credit. And to me, that goes too far. So I do think that on the bottom of page 3, we want to make sure that the Palmer High students or the students down, high school students down in Soldotna, can do be in a civics class, pick an issue, pick their own position, and write a letter. And it sounds like the sponsor supports that kind of thing. We might need some language to make sure that kind of thing can still happen, and to support the sponsor's intent.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Reinbold.
So, Mr. Chairman, we will have public testimony when the committee is will, and we'll have several examples of existence of this in the school district at this time. But I would like to point to an op-ed written by Dave Donnelly, who's on the Anchorage School Board. It was written April 15th, 2021, and I would actually like to make it part of the official records if you so please.
Please proceed.
What it talks about is basically the belief about white supremacy, anti-tradition, anti-capitalism, anti-individual, anti-merit-based system, and teaches that all white people are racists. And this is a very serious issue. And then I have a few quotes from a book, if you don't mind. It's called the quote from White Fragility. And it says, when I say only whites can be racist, I mean in the United States, only whites have the collective, social, and institutional power and privilege over people of color. In addition, on page 163, it says, to love capitalism is end up loving racism. To love racism is end up loving capitalism. The conjoined twins are two-sided in the same destructive body. Mr. Chairman, if I can move on to a few more. Page 222. They were reacting to the same moderates and liberal assimilation forces that all these years still reduced racism to the individual acts of white Klansmen and Jim Crow politicians and Tea Party Republicans and the N-word users and the white nationalist shooters of Trumpian politicals. And then it just goes on and on and on.
Is that a book on some schools?
It's called White Fragility, Mr. Chairman.
Is it on some schools' curriculum?
And I'll continue to read from the op-ed. I have objected to the district endorsing these books on taxpayer-funded websites without listing any or recognition of opposing views through literature. I submitted a list of all the books and publications that present opposing opinions, but the district refused to list them. I objected to the lack of any disclaimer to the political and partisan content of the books. Only recently, under public pressure, did the ASD add a very weak and adequate disclaimer to several of the non-CRT books, but none in opposition to CRT.
And could you please define CRT? What does that mean?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Reinbold.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I really wanted to stick with transparency and dignity, but if you want me to indulge in one definition of critical race theory, I will.
And is this,
is critical race theory. Let's not use CRT.
And was that a quote from Mr. Donnelly from his op-ed?
Yes, and I've got it here if you'd like. But yes, this is all right now quoted from Mr. Donnelly's op-ed.
Senator Machicki.
So we were on the subject of compelling behavior, and I'm not sure how we got to the book burning subject, but I got to tell you, let's stick to the compelling issue because I think that's pretty important. What formed my conservative philosophy through the years, a large part had to do with some of the nonsense I read by others. And I think it's really important for people to see both sides of those things. The question, though, are there, and I appreciate Senator Hughes's example, because if there has been extra credit awarded for a certain position, I actually don't support that. That is a problem. I think this goes really wide on sort of the way that you went about trying to control the compelling issue. So what I would like to see is young people, and I love when I get letters from young people that aren't forced into a position. I'd rather they flow kind of freely, because then I reach out to those kids. I love getting letters from young people. I reach out to them, say, that's a good point in that letter. So what do you believe, and where did you get this? And let me give you some resources that might sort of balance that approach, right? Because that's what I think is potentially a problem with the way students are instructed at a young age. Now, the separate discussion on the college level, because some of my very leftist instructors solidified how I felt about my positions once I got into college from the things I learned in high school. But the compelling issue is an important thing to discuss. That is an important thing to discuss. The state legislature limiting the free exchange is a different kind of problem, and that's what I'm kind of on guard against, because I do think that's where they start forming their thoughts. I think young people are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and some of those things on either side, on either extreme, at a very young age, people start sort of averaging the information and kind of thinking, well, okay, both sides are a little bit wacky here. I'm going to begin focusing more on the literature from these two bookends, because I think that's the reality of how the world works. So you're kind of getting off on a single example. I'm not giving you a hard time because of that, because I think that's fair, and I know Mr. Donnelly quite well. But are there examples in that about compelled behavior? And we do have to define compelling if this bill's going anywhere, because I think that's probably what we're arguing about. And you don't need to do it now. I mean, I assume we're not moving this bill today. But that, I think that's going to be an important thing as we go forward. I'm very interested if there are activities in the state of Alaska right now that are rewarding the adoption of a position of an instructor. That would concern me.
All right. Thank you, Senator Machicki. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Attorney General enforcement issue, which would effectively have the state compel local government to no longer have effectively control over what they choose to do here and enjoin lawsuits, may have constitutional issues. Have you looked into that at all? Have you got a legal opinion on this bill as to whether it does or doesn't violate constitutional provisions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Reinbold?
To the best of my knowledge, we do not have a legal memo, but it says in Section 14.18.17d, it says the Attorney General may. It doesn't say shall. So that's a really important, I mean, we debate about that word may versus shall all the time. So anyway, it just gives the opportunity, but it doesn't force it. It doesn't say shall commence.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Are there any other questions from the committee about Senate Bill 196? Seeing none, Senator Reinbold, do you have some comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just quick wrap-up comments. In regards to Chapter 18, right now, there is a prohibition against discrimination based on sex, race, and education, and it gets into all these different issues. So I would just like people to refresh themselves in regards to discrimination, employment, you know, issues, counseling, recreation. It already, a lot of this is already in state statute. And what this does is it just puts a little bit of bookends in it. And like I said, it gets the extremes out of it to basically, if it's really extreme in regards to racism or sexism, in the bottom line, that's the bookends that it puts into this bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, it was a great opportunity. So thank you for hearing this bill today, and I really appreciate it. And I look forward to further discussions and public testimony.
I would be interested. We'll probably get some feedback from law and how the that was a question I had about the Attorney General. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, what section, what title was that and section that you were referring to? I'd just like to review that as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Please proceed.
Chapter 18, and this is, it's Title 14, Chapter 18. So it's 14-18-010, and then it goes all the way through, Mr. Chairman, to 14-18-110.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mr. King has we'll go to the presenter's table to offer some information. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed King again, staff Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out within the drafting something for the committee to consider. As was just pointed out, Title 14, Chapter 18 is anti-discrimination, and the references within that chapter all state this chapter. The addition of the new subsections are all excluded from those previous sections. And so that's why you're seeing everywhere in the bill, it's changing this chapter to that range of existing law. And that's why the reference to the Board of Regents is here, is specifically to say that the university is not subject to these new sections. I would point out that there is potentially a gap here on page one, as Senator Hughes pointed out, in subsection A. The board that's being referenced there is the State Board of Education, and by narrowing the range from this chapter to only through 110, which is existing law, it might be the case that the board does not have authority to write regulations over the new law. So it's something that we need to address.
All right. Thank you, Mr. King. All right. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none. At this time, thank you, Senator Reinbold, for joining us presenting this bill today. I will now set Senate Bill 196 aside. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting is going to be a joint meeting with House Education on Monday, March 28th at 8:30 a.m. in room number 106 in the Capitol Building.
What is the topic?
Brief at ease. Thank you. It was just to clarify what the joint meeting is about. It's a ACSA joint presentation to the House and the Senate.
And you said 8 a.m.?
8:30 a.m., room number 106. With that, we are adjourned at 10:08 a.m.